If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
See, I always like to let the song build a little bit. That one's long. I gotta be patient on that one when you roll it in. Good morning, and welcome to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB on a cloudy Saturday across Kansas City and the Midwest. The sun is supposed to pop out a little bit later. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here in the studio. Rudy Salazar is behind the glass and therefore making our musical selections today. Got a good show lined up for you. At 9:25, David Leske from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City will join us and talk a little Royals baseball. And as I will tweet out later, we will try to make that as painless as possible. When your team has lost six in a row and is on pace to lose around 110 ball games, most in franchise history, there's not a lot of good things to say, but we'll see what we can find. Maybe we'll mix in a little draft as well, as the Royals are loading up on college arms. So David Leske at 9:25. At 10 o'clock, Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com will join us. Again, the Chiefs OTAs this week, only one day open to the media. They've updated their policy from previous years where you could go every day, but the league says you only have to do one, and that's what the Chiefs are doing, and Matt Derrick was there. So we'll find out about Patrick Mahomes, because you get these varied reports. Ah, Mahomes is throwing it 90 yards like Uncle Rico, you know, over the side of a mountain. And then you get other reports. Well, he missed a lot of guys. Who knows? So Matt Derrick was out there, and he's going to join us at 10 o'clock. At 11, Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com will join us and talk a little Sporting KC as they get ready for the late night game tonight in Portland, West Coast. So it's a 9:30 start live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, which means Dave Borchardt is going to have a really late Final Whistle postgame show at about 11:30-ish. So Andy Edwards, the U.S. men's national team, not playing in the World Cup, but they're playing these friendlies, exhibition games. They're playing France today. And we'll talk to Andy about that, because the French national team, they're not taking this one off. They got a World Cup to get ready for, and all the big dogs are playing for France today. They've got about $1 billion worth of players they're going to roll out against the U.S. today. So Andy Edwards at 11. Then around 11:30, we're going to go back to a little game we played a couple of weeks ago with the Belmont happening today, with Justify going for the Triple Crown. We played a game a couple of weeks ago where I listed off the names, several names, and you had to guess if it was the name of a horse that's actually in the race or a name that I made up. And Jed Marshall is taking it over today. So, Jed, you've got a list of names you've made up. You feel confident you can throw us off there?
I do. So I'm going to tweak the game a little bit. This is maybe unfair of me, but I'm going to do a list of, obviously, the Preakness people will be in, but I'm going to do all-time horse racing names, because I don't know. There are only like eight participants in the Preakness, or no, the Belmont, excuse me.
And we know two or three.
Sure. So yeah. I thought that'd make it a little bit easier. But yeah, me and some of my buddies were hanging out last night and brainstormed, and I think we came up with some good ones to throw you guys off the scent.
Well, last time we played, Charlie Carlin and Rudy Salazar were the contestants, and Rudy says he doesn't know a lot about horse racing, but he lived around the, you know, Kentucky, Louisville area, and his grandpa gives him a tip every year before the Kentucky Derby, so he's got some peripheral knowledge,
I
right?
I did not miss a name. Got them all. I went 4 for 4.
Wow. What was your
pretty
tip?
Proud of myself.
Yeah, no doubt. What was your tip this year from your grandfather?
Oh, for the Kentucky Derby, what was the horse's name that he told me?
Was it Justify?
Not Justify.
He's a fool.
He had Justify, like, as obviously as one, but was it Affirmed?
No, that was several years ago.
I know why I'm thinking of Affirmed. Dr. Jacobs was at a show. He's been talking about Affirmed, so that's why Affirmed was in my head. It was the horse that won the Florida Derby this year. I can't remember its name now, but that was the horse.
I'd say collectively we know 0.00001% about horse racing compared to your average horse racing enthusiast.
Yeah, that's probably even high.
By the way, my apologies if I've got a little cough or sounded a little nasally today. I've been battling a cold all week. This is what happens, and we're going to get into sports, I promise, but took a trip to Atlanta last weekend. My oldest son was in the History B, which is like the spelling bee, but it's for history. It's a heated competition against some of the smartest kids in the country. So we went to Atlanta, took in a Braves Nationals game, that 14-inning affair last Saturday. So that was fun. Nationals, or rather the Atlanta Braves new ballpark, outstanding. Great. And they have lots of bars and restaurants around it. It's out in the county now. It's like 20 minutes outside of downtown. But it's
Brevard County, is that what it's called?
I feel like that's what it's called.
Like
Calhoun County,
maybe,
or Colby.
Something like that. It's where all the very rich people live.
Yes.
Like,
And all the big companies that are based in Atlanta are out there, outside of downtown.
All of the Atlanta sports teams eventually are going to actually leave Atlanta for the suburbs.
Yes.
Wow, look at Rudy with the hot Atlanta knowledge.
There you go.
I know a little bit about Catlanta.
Yeah,
the Dirty South,
place.
Man.
Yeah.
That's
Kentucky, that's what we call Atlanta, Catlanta.
I call it Hotlanta because it's freaking hot.
Yeah, Kentucky always has wins the SEC tournament when it's there usually, and we always because it's a 5-hour drive. It's usually packed with UK fans, so they call it Catlanta. Of course, this last time in Catlanta, we did not win. We lost to K-State.
Well, that happens. That'll happen.
So it was still Catlanta.
It was still Catlanta, yes.
You don't walk into a game against K-State, even if you're Kentucky, and, try to sleepwalk through that. That ain't happening, Rudy. I got news for you. This is the Bruce Weber
game.
Era.
I did a radio. I have a friend who has a radio show out in Kentucky, and I was talking with him about it. And I was like, there's only one scenario in which I could see Kentucky losing. And I was like, I don't think it'll happen at all. And I said exactly what happened. K-State all of a sudden K-State starts hitting threes, which they don't do, and Kentucky has and this is not a hot take or anything, but if K-State makes threes and Kentucky's has a historically bad offensive night, which is what happens.
Credit K-State's defense.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Don't be a petty Kentucky fan.
Yeah. K-State played K-State played amazing
against those 6'10", 6'11" guys.
They did really, really
man
good.
Alive. Holy cow. But if you get a chance to go to the new Atlanta baseball park, it's outstanding. We sat in the upper deck, and there's not a bad seat in that place. And the other interesting thing about Atlanta, we went to the aquarium. I'm sure this is all very interesting, but there was a disclaimer on the ticket when you go to the aquarium in Atlanta. They have a list of things that you cannot bring in. No guns, no knives, no bats, no whatever. And the very last thing listed is no fishing poles, which made me laugh hysterically because it's an aquarium. So at some point, there must have been a family that showed up with their fishing poles thinking that if they went to the aquarium to see these exotic animals that they were going to be able to, drop a line in and, catch a spoonbill or something. Maybe a big blue tuna. So I thought that was hilarious. But anyway, that leads to why I've been under the weather for a week. My rule is, it's not my rule, it just happens. Whenever I fly and stay in a hotel for more than one night, I come back and I get sick because you're around all these people and the airplanes and the circulating air and people are coughing. People travel, they're nasty. I mean, getting on an airplane in your pajamas and bare feet for crying out loud.
Back off there, Brad.
Okay, is that what you do?
No, I mean, okay. I'm not saying I do that, okay. But I walk around the station barefoot.
Well, you're at work, you're here.
Yeah, being at work, that makes it better walking around
barefoot.
It does.
Well, when you pack 110 people in an airplane, it creeps me out a little bit.
Fair enough.
Creeps me out.
All right.
It just does. So where do we want to start today? There's a couple of places we could start. David Leskey is going to join us at 9:25 to talk Royals, so we don't have to get into it in depth right now, especially since they've been playing like garbage for the last week, 6 straight losses. They're 22 games under 500. I mean, we all knew this team was going to be bad, but 22 games under 500? I mean, if you're a fan of the tanking, you got it. Yeah, I mean, it's on pace for, 110 losses? Most in franchise history? On board. Fine with me. You roll out that lineup last night. Paulo Orlando in center field. Ryan Goins at second base at the bottom of the order. Good gravy. Alcides Escobar back hitting second? I mean, I don't know what Ned Yost is supposed to do. I can't be critical of it because guys have to bat. It's going to happen. Jorge Soler got hurt, fouled the ball off his foot, left in the second inning. Jacob Junis was bad, 6 earned runs in 5 1/3, and Ned Yost had struggled with the command of the slider, and that's his pitch. Jacob Junis, slider, that's his pitch.
Yeah, he didn't have it going last night. Jorge Soler overreacting to getting hit by the foul ball was a little embarrassing. You were talking about the lineup, and you mentioned Escobar being in the two hole. We were talking about before the show how that's not even the most egregious thing about the lineup, and we don't need to spend a lot of time breaking down the ills of the Royals lineup. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But, I mean, what are your other options? Ryan Goins batting second?
That's not getting it done.
Paulo Orlando.
What are you supposed to do?
Yeah. This team is devoid of a lot of options at so many different positions. And even the options that they do have, Ned Yost, for whatever reason, is deciding to go with the veterans like a Goins or whatever, as opposed to keeping Merrifield at his normal position. And the outfield's an absolute mess until Bonifacio gets back. So it's really perplexing as far as what you're going to do. But yeah, as far as breaking down the day-to-day operations of the Royals, there's not a lot to be taken away from. Junis wasn't very good, which is disappointing.
It's going to become a fruitless effort, and it's the downside, at least for what we do, is the NBA is done, the NHL is over, the NFL, nothing big is going to happen until training camp, so we've got this dead period, and the Royals for the last 4 or 5 years have been interesting to talk about. Right now it's not, but here's the good thing I'll give you. We've been talking about all these young kids with Clint Scholes from Baseball Perspectives, David Leske, who's going to join us at 9:25. You know, Nicky Lopez, Nick Prado, EJ Melendez, the young catcher. Sully Matias, if you have not been following, is he at Lexington?
Yep. Yeah, he's at Lexington.
If you have not been following the development of young Sully Matias, and he's like 19 years old, he's got 19 home runs.
Looks
folks.
Like an NFL linebacker already.
Yes, he's freakish. I mean, Clint Scholes will put up video of him on his Twitter account because he finds these online streams of these minor league games. Sully Matias is huge, and he's got 19 home runs. And look, it's a minor league park. I get it. And he's, you know, these minor league parks aren't cathedrals. They're not that big. But 19 home runs is 19 home runs, for crying out loud. So that's some good stuff for the Royals.
I can't believe, though, you forgot the biggest thing this summer.
Okay.
The United States is in the...
Not in the World Cup. Nope. Not going to happen.
So depressing.
And it starts next week, correct?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I've been I've talked to myself because I've heard... I listen to the Men in Blazers podcast, and they've talked about it.
Those guys are pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like
and
them.
They've talked about it, how... when England's missed in the past, those have actually been their favorite World Cups because you're not worrying about your team. You're just enjoying it. So I'm trying to tell myself that to try to make it better. It's not really working. Because, it will be, I guess you could say that's the benefit of your team. If you're trying to find the positive side, is you can just enjoy the World Cup. If your team doesn't do well, you don't have to worry about if your team does well or not because they're not in it. But, man, would it be great if we were in it.
It's going to hurt when Panama rolls out there because that's a bum-ass squad. And they're in the World Cup, and the U.S. isn't.
Not as bum-ass as the U.S.?
Well, if you don't win, you lose. I read a very long article this week, and I gave it to my friend Nick Garcia, used to play for the Wizards and Sporting KC. It took me like 25 minutes to read. It was a deep dive on all the mistakes the U.S. has made in the last 8 years that led to this total flop. And we'll get into that deeper with Andy Edwards at 11 o'clock. I really want to talk about the NBA Finals because I was of the... my belief going in was, you know, there was, oh my gosh, Warriors, Cavaliers again. 4 years in a row. Why? Same teams over and over. It's boring. No, it's not. I like to see the best teams with the best players fight for the biggest prize in basketball, which is the NBA championship. If it happens to be the same two teams 4 years in a row... fine. If the other teams want to be there instead, do something about it. I watched the Cavaliers last night, and that third quarter, look, we all know the Warriors own third quarters, especially in this playoffs. Every round, third quarters, they dominate. And to me, the Cavaliers, including LeBron James, I don't care what he says about his hand injury, didn't affect him the other couple of games. To me, collectively as a group, they quit. They capitulated in the third quarter and gave up on their home floor. How does that happen? These are the best basketball players on planet Earth. They're the highest paid, and money doesn't have anything to do with that. Never judge a guy based on his money. They're the highest paid players on the earth. They're the most talented players on the earth. And that Cavaliers team absolutely quit. Now, also give credit to the Warriors. They went out and kicked ass. They went out and said, because I was talking about this, my kids love the NBA, and we were talking at lunch yesterday about the game. And my youngest said, well, why don't the Warriors just lose so they can win at home? I said, it doesn't work like that. The Warriors are killers. Now, they have the on-off switch. They got it to a certain point in the regular season where they switched it off and said, we're good with a two seed. We don't have to win 72 games. We don't have to be the old Bulls who felt it was their mission every year to win 70 and 72 games. They switched it off. They were in cruise control. And in a couple of rounds of the playoffs, they got that cruise control mentality. They get to the finals, they turn into killers. Kevin Durant, people want to, you know, bag on Kevin Durant for hunting rings. That's what you do. You win, you want to win championships. I don't care where he goes to play basketball. Was Oklahoma City going to win with him and Westbrook? I don't think so. Kevin Durant flipped a switch in this series. He's been good through most of the playoffs anyway. Flipped a switch. Back-to-back MVPs. Steph Curry last night. He's not been good in this series. He's been good on different nights. He hasn't been great. Last night, Steph Curry flipped a switch. Dumped in 37 points. Dominated. LeBron took 13 shots. 13 shots. The best player on planet Earth. I know he said after the game he hurt his hand. After the game one overtime loss, he punched a whiteboard in the locker room and hurt his hand. 13 shots. Sorry. That's not the narrative I'm gonna let off the hook. The Warriors outscored the Cavs 25-13 in the third quarter. And Kevin Durant for the series, almost 29 points a game, over 10.5 rebounds, 7 assists. Awesome. Now, the MVP voting was a little bit off for me because Durant won over Steph Curry by 7-4. I mean, if anybody else was getting votes, it would have been LeBron in my book, even though he had a horrible game four. But back to where I started, that Cavaliers team quit on their home floor, and that's embarrassing.
You could see it. You were talking about the third quarter, and that's where Golden State had excelled throughout the entire season. I remember a distinct play where it was a loose ball, and LeBron and Draymond Green were going for it. Draymond Green ended up getting the loose ball because he went balls to the wall. LeBron just kind of half-heartedly went for the ball. They got Golden State got another 24 and ended up making a three on that possession. It was such a culmination of everything that was happening in the game. The Cavs came out, kept it close for a half, and then in the third quarter, Golden State blitzed them. It was all due to effort. Tyronn Lue was trying to do everything he could. He was calling timeouts to, you know, break up the runs. But it was once the run hit, the Cavs...
That was it?
Yeah, the Cavs folded the tent and were like, well, we're done.
It was kind of like the old Roy Williams, Kansas Jayhawks. When they were playing a team that maybe was pretty good, but not quite as good, they let them mess around. You knew, everybody would say, the run is coming. With a Roy Williams coach team, the run is coming. Bill Self, Kansas Jayhawks, the run is coming. And the Warriors' run came. And they took sideline shots of Tyronn Lue. And look, I love Tyronn, Kansas City kid, Raytown High School kid. He looked like he was in abject disbelief at the lack of effort from his team, from the Cavaliers.
Yeah, he did. I was sitting there just, what do you do as a guy?
There's no answer.
You can't get out there and play as much as I'm sure Tyronn Lue would love to. But at a certain level, these guys, like you said, they're professionals. They're well compensated. And there's also a certain amount of pride that goes into it. I don't know. To me, the playoffs were so interesting because LeBron was such a dominant force and you dependent upon who you were cheering for in the West or who you thought was going to come out of the West. At least for me, I know I picked the Rockets, but the Warriors, it seemed like, were the favorites, even as the two seed. Had game one gone differently, we could be talking about a series that's 2-2 and barreling towards being another great finals. It's just so unfortunate that everything unfolded the way that it did, and we're kind of robbed of what could have been a compelling series.
Yeah, it was. I almost,
J.R. Smith will giveth, and J.R. Smith will taketh, man.
I know you love J.R. Smith.
I do, because of just the extremes that is J.R. Smith, because I've watched him make 13 threes in a row.
Yeah.
And I've now watched him forget the score in the finals. And the thing is, like, I think J.R. Smith does this a lot throughout the season, but when you do it in the final, like, I don't think this was a one-time thing for J.R. Smith. I just think there are most times he's not in a situation where him forgetting the score actually affects the game. But when it happens, you game win the finals Golden State. It's just like, really, man? Like, well, there's so much extremes with J.R. Smith.
I don't even care if you zone out at any point, but when you're playing in a tie ball game, a one-point ball game, that's, you should be engaged. But if you're like, all right, man, we're up like 12 points, we're down 12 points. I mean, if you zone out, I can completely get that.
Now, to give J.R. Smith credit, because at first,
he did throw a bowl of soup at someone.
He tried to like come up with excuses. Like, no, I knew the score, I just was afraid to shoot the ball at Dray. J.R. Smith's never been afraid to shoot the ball at Dray's life. But then I love how he comes back the next day. He's like, actually, guys, I have no idea what was going on in my head.
Yeah.
I'm like, I kind of respect that a little bit, because we know you didn't have any idea what was going on. And to admit, like, I really don't know what I was thinking, I'm like, yeah, that's J.R. Smith.
He does, and he got a technical last night, and the most shocking thing in this finals, and we're coming up on a timeout here, the most shocking thing is that Draymond Green got through four games without getting a technical.
No, he got one in game one.
Oh, he got one in game one.
Yeah, him and Tristan Thompson scuffle.
Oh, that's what they got,
the double. But the fact that he only got one is pretty impressive. Yes, that's impressive.
And never got suspended.
And the refs really let him play. We can get back to this after David Leskie, and we can kind of talk about what the Warriors' legacy will be and what maybe moving forward. But
absolutely,
I know we need a break. He's freaking out.
Yeah, we will take a quick timeout. Coming up next, David Leskie from Baseball Perspectives Kansas City is going to join us, talk a little Royals baseball. We'll try to find the positive things as well as talk about the things that aren't going well. At 10 o'clock, Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com will join us, talk Chiefs OTAs. And at 11 o'clock, Andy Edwards, NBCSports.com will join us, talk Sporting KC and the upcoming World Cup, plus our horse racing game show at 11:30. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall's here in studio. Rudy Salazar is behind the glass, and we are live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter, broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios. Jed Marshall is here as well. Rudy Salazar is running the show. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com, will join us. Talk about Chiefs OTAs, the one open session the media were allowed in. So we'll get his opinions on what everybody wants to know what Patrick Mahomes looks like. Sammy Watkins loves the new system, says it's the broadest offensive system he's ever played in. So we'll get his thoughts on that. At 11 o'clock, Andy Edwards, NBCSports.com, will join us, talk Sporting KC and the upcoming World Cup, sans the United States. But joining us now is David Leskie from Baseball Perspectives Kansas City. Follow him on Twitter, at DB Leskie. David, I tweeted out earlier, we'll try to make this as painless as possible, and I got a tweet back from one of our good listeners, D Wags, at Wags98. He said, if you guys need some Royals news to talk about, how about this? I've been living under a rock. How'd the 15 season go? I'll hang up and keep listening.
That's certainly something.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, David. We'll try to find some positives here, but this team's in a six-game losing streak, and for all the tankers out there who want the first overall pick next year, they're having their way, and that's fine. I'm all for, you know, the losing. I'm not a fan of tanking per se, but this team is charging straight at close to 110 losses. You can tank without being embarrassing, for crying out loud.
Well, I mean, you can, but what's crazier about this team is they don't seem to be trying to tank.
No, they're a tanking team that actually has a handful of good major league players on there.
Right, and it's, you know, they're, what, 21-43? Is that the record now?
21-43, 22 under 500.
Yeah, so they're doing that before they trade off their best players.
Right.
They traded John Jay, but, I mean, you know how I feel about John Jay.
Yeah. He had a hot month, but, and the Royals cashed in at the exact right time.
That made the most sense. But, you know, they're gonna move Moustakas. They're going to move Herrera. They might move Merrifield. They probably won't move Merrifield, is my guess, but they might. And and they're doing that with those guys. What's going to happen when they're gone? You know, I said before the season, I thought the first 81 games, you split it up into actually two halves and not call the second half the last 70 games after the All-Star break or whatever. But they could be really bad the first 81 games of the season. I mean, I'm talking like, and now this looks optimistic, but I remember I was on Sports Night with Cody and I said 26-55. And now you look at that and you go, how can they go 5-12 over the next 70?
Right. They're way behind already.
Right. But then I thought, well, the bullpen's going to get better. They're going to start bringing guys up. Some pieces are going to settle in. And I think they're going to be better in the last 81 games. As I'm thinking about that, I don't think I grasped just how good Herrera would be. Moustakas has been slumping a little bit, but he's still having a really solid season. How good he'd be. And losing those two, what that would mean, even with the increased quality of the bullpen. And so now I'm not so sure they'll be pretty okay in the second half of the season. It could get really ugly. But at the same time, Jorge Bonifacio will be back. He's probably going to go today, the ninth. He's probably going to go on a rehab assignment today.
Yeah.
Today or tomorrow. Because he gets 20 full days. So why not take advantage of that? So he'll be back in less than 6 weeks now at this point, unless there's some rainouts that make his 80 games go longer. Jorge Soler, you know, if he can come back from the foot injury that he sustained last night, we'll see how that plays out today and tomorrow. But, you know, they could be okay. Hunter Dozier has looked pretty solid. He might be able to slide over to third when they trade Moustakas. You know, there are some possibilities that it won't be a complete disaster. There's a non-zero chance that this team ends up with the most losses in team history. And coming into the season, I thought, well, they don't hold a candle those 04 to 06 teams.
Oh,
boy,
man.
Do they.
Well, I traveled with those teams at the time when I was in television, and I would just look at you'd walk around the clubhouse and you're like, what collection is this?
Right. It was like Major League.
Exactly. It was, yeah. Why don't we sign this guy? Well, he's dead. Well, mark him off the list. But those teams might have signed a guy
They very well. What with Ruben Mateo, Abraham Nunez? I mean, these guys who you will never hear about again. We're hitting fourth for those teams, and they might end up better than the 2018 Royals.
Wow, that's saying a lot. We're talking with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus, covers the Royals and writes about the Royals. I guess the big red flag from last night, in addition to another loss, is Jacob Junis. 6 earned runs, 10 hits, 5 1/3. Ned Yost said his slider wasn't there, and that was very clear. And if his slider's not there, it's not happening for Jacob Junis. And I kind of thought about this morning, and maybe it doesn't make sense, maybe it does. He's pitched full seasons in the minor leagues, but the major league level is different. It's a different level of pressure. It's a different level of intensity. Is there any chance he's hit a little bit of a wall, maybe a little bit of dead arm? I don't know. Or is it just, you know, he's had a couple of these bad nights here and there, but not many. But, you know, he has these 5 and 6 run nights once in a while.
Yeah, he does. And last night is a really good example of why I don't think he even has the possibilities of being more than a number three starter. And that's okay. It's okay if he's a number three starter because he's probably a 200 inning guy, which, or 180 now, I guess, is what would be the benchmark in baseball today. He's a guy you can count on probably for 30 to 33 starts every single season. But he relies so heavily on one pitch that's largely a feel pitch, that slider, that when it's not there, like it wasn't last night, he'll get hit around. And if you want to talk about a guy who's a 1 or a 2, they don't have that issue. They don't rely so heavily on one pitch that if they're without it, they're in trouble. And that's not a knock on Junis. He's still a very good pitcher. I'm a huge fan of Jake Junis. It's just he's a number three starter at best, and that's okay. And he probably is a number three starter, not just at best, but he's that good. You know, it's something that he can help the team for years to come, but that's a little bit of an issue. You know, if you're talking about the next good Royals team, if Jake Junis is the ace, that's probably not the next good Royals team. So, you know, I don't think there's a wall necessarily that he's hit. He threw 98 in the third innings, I think, in the big leagues last year. either 160 or so innings total. So I don't think he's necessarily hitting a wall necessarily there, but it's just that it's one of those things. If he doesn't have his slider, he's going to struggle.
We're talking with David Leske, writes for BP Kansas City, Baseball Prospectus. One final question about last night's game. Frankie Mantos, the pitcher for the A's, had the Royals shutout going into the eighth inning before he gave up the two-run home run to Mike Moustakas. And we've seen this so many times this year where collectively the Royals just go into the dumps as a team at the plate. They don't have a lot of nights where they get three guys who get two and three hits, but they have a lot of nights where a bunch of guys go 0 for 4 and 0 for 5.
I don't know why that is. You know, we talked about that in the last 2 years, and they would slump together, they get hot together, they're so close. Even close. I don't think anybody knows.
No.
You know, walk into the locker room, and it's not they just like each other. It's just, right, I forgot you were on the team. Nice to see you. You look at the lineup day in and day out, there's just no continuity, and that's nobody's fault. It's just the nature of the 2018 season. So I don't know. I don't know why that is. I guess there is something to the fact that a pitcher can, if the first three or four or five, six guys struggle or whatever, a pitcher can get in a bit of a rhythm and they can get going a little bit and then they can pitch well. You know, like last night, Montas is a good pitcher. He's I don't know if he's a good pitcher, but he's got good stuff. And when a guy with good stuff can get rolling, it can be trouble no matter what your offense is. You know, if he's facing the Yankees, who have an insanely good offense, and he goes two or three innings and doesn't give up a hit, he can get rolling. He could probably have a really good game against them, too. So that makes sense to me, but it's just happened so often with this team. They're either scoring 1.2 runs a game or 6.2 runs a game, basically. There's no in-between with these guys. It's crazy, actually. I'm surprised. I think they've only been shut out, three times this year, maybe four?
Yep.
And you'd expect that to be like 9 or 10, but somehow they always find a way to get that one run in the eighth inning, it seems like, and did last night with the two-run homer from Moustakas. So, I don't know. This team is—they're puzzling, and they're bad, but they're not interesting.
No, and that's where the season gets away, because there'll be nights where I'll tune in for a few innings and then I'll just read the recap the next day because there's not much there. It just
right.
That's the way it's going to be until spring training or until these recent draft picks start hitting the rookie camps out in Arizona, which we might as well. We'll go there in a second, but one more thing. Today's game, early game today, 3:05. Josh Briscoe in for Baseball Tonight at 2 o'clock. Danny Duffy against Santiago Casilla. And here's where, again, when you're talking about you dread certain things with this ball club, Santiago Casilla has pitched out of the bullpen this year. 16 games, 21 and a third, 3.32 ERA, 1.15 whip, which is pretty good. But this will be his first start today since he had Tommy John surgery back in 2016. And my dread as a fan is whenever you have that rookie making his first start or that guy making his first start after a major injury, the Royals are the perfect team to do that against. And I have that same dread today.
Well, I feel like are they going, it's just the opener strategy with them. I can't remember if I saw that or not, or if he's just going to go as long as he can go.
Yeah, he's probably not going to go that long.
Well, I think this is the opener. I think I saw that somewhere. I could be totally wrong here. I probably should have known that before. But he's probably set up to go an inning and a third, inning and two thirds. My biggest thing is going to go four innings on like 19 pitches. that is the Royals' way. This could either go really well for the Royals or really poorly. I'll be interested in the lineup. And part of it, Jorge Soler, with him out of the lineup. Once he left the game last night in the second or third inning or whatever it was,
That's what I'm saying. That's how I feel every day now, and it's going to be a long summer until we get to Chiefs training camp. Because I go into the gas station and there's this really nice guy who owns a local gas station where I go, and he'll say, "Well, what are we today? 21-42," and then that's it. That's where the discussion ends because there's nothing interesting to talk about. And then
they won't bat Almonte fifth, obviously, if he's first there. But that lineup after Soler left, oh my God, that was That was rough to look at.
We're talking with David Leske, Baseball Prospectus, writes about the Royals. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter. All right, let's get to some other things that are more interesting. The tweets were exploding yesterday. We've been following all these young kids in the Royal system, Nicky Lopez, Nick Prado, AJ Melendez, and Sully Matias. And Sully Matias and Clint Scholes, who writes for BP Kansas City, will occasionally post video of these guys that he finds online. And the kid's built like a brick, you know what. And he cracked his 19th home run last night. And I was looking at his numbers, 19 home runs, 36 RBIs. He does strike out a lot, 71 strikeouts versus 13 walks. But I get that minor league ballparks are minor league ballparks. They're not as big. But 19 home runs is a big number for this kid.
Yeah, yeah, he's special. I don't know if he's a big leaguer, but he's special. And the reason he you know, you look at the scouting grades and on the 20-80 scale, a lot of people give him a 20 on the hit tool, which is the worst it can possibly be. And it's because if he's swinging, he's probably missing. He's either missing or hitting it a long way, basically. But that's, he's 19 years old also. And
right.
There's plenty of room for him to figure it out, make a little more contact. His swinging strike rate is actually not as bad as you'd expect, but about 24-25%, which is really high. But given his like 40% strikeout rate, you'd think it would be a lot higher. If not, that's a good thing. I think part of the reason for the strikeouts is he's trying to be more selective. I think he's probably taking some pitches he shouldn't take. He's probably spending a little bit too much time watching strikes just because he wants to see as many pitches as possible. And that's okay in the minors because it's a development thing. That's a big reason why you don't want a stat scout in the minor leagues. And you know, you can look at a guy who's just tearing the cover off the ball or doing this or that. And maybe there's, like you said, the ballpark is a reason. Maybe he's facing a pitcher working on something that's a reason. And by the same token, if a guy who is struggling, they might be working on something. It's a lot like spring training. The stats aren't quite as meaningless, but you can't only stat scout a minor league player. And so with him, I think my guess is he's working on pitch recognition. So he's probably taking some pitches that if he had his druthers, he would be gripping and ripping on. And maybe wouldn't strike out quite as much. So that's encouraging. But yeah, he's a guy to watch. He's got some massive power. He's in Lexington right now. Eventually he'll be up in Wilmington, which just kills right-handed power. So we'll see how he handles that. But if he gets past that, we could see some massive numbers in Northwest Arkansas and Omaha because both those parks are really solid for right-handed hitters. I mean, we could look at if he spends a full year at each level and he continues to progress, you could see 85 home runs between the two levels, which is just unreal. The guy has as much power as I feel like anybody who's been in the Royals organization. That includes Bo Jackson. So he's got a very special tool, and hopefully he can round out his game a little bit and make it to the big leagues and show that off at Kauffman Stadium.
We're talking with David Leske. Follow him on Twitter at DB Leske. Covers the Royals and writes about the Royals for BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus. All right, the Royals had their draft this past week, and look, there's nobody in the business better than Clint Scholes as far as giving you the deep dive information about who the Royals drafted, because Clint spends a ton of time watching minor league ball players and getting the information on the players that the Royals draft. But we can still be, in more broader terms, talk about the philosophy in going with college pitching. And then with the trade for John Jay, you got another young 18-year-old pitcher along with a 23-year-old, but the 18-year-old is the one they want. But that philosophy, I agree with Soren Petro on this. That leads me to believe that the Royals are trying to timeline this so that those college arms, who are going to be more advanced than the high school arms, will match up with the Nick Prados and the Nicky Lopez's and the MJ Melendez's and those guys. Does that kind of fit with your thinking, or do you have a different idea about that?
No, I think that's exactly it. I think there's two reasons they did what they did in the draft. The first is with the pitching side, because they drafted, 30 pitchers or something like that?
Yeah, right around there.
They looked at the organization and they said, we don't have pitching. And if you look at, there's some relief prospects. So that, they're okay there. There's, Royals will always have relief prospects as long as Dayton Moore is in charge. They they can handle that side of it. But as far as starting pitching, you look to the organization, Foster Griffin has a 6-plus ERA in AA. Scott Blewett doesn't strike batters out. Glenn Sparkman, he's probably a reliever long-term. And there's Carlos Hernandez, who's in Lexington. He's off the radar, but he's probably their best starting pitching prospect before the draft. And Daniel Tillo, who's in Wilmington and pitching very well. I like Tillo. I think he's kind of a 3-4 starter like Junis. And then that's pretty much it. They don't have a whole lot. There's some wild cards in the low levels that are going to be in short season that haven't started yet. But they don't have anything else. And so they went out and they got a bunch of pitchers. And some of them won't be starters. Some of them won't make it at all. But they replenished an organization that had basically zero pitching. And so, and the other side of it is the college side. And yeah, I think I wrote about this. I heard someone talk about this. A lot of people have mentioned it. I believe, and I haven't talked to anybody to know this for sure, but I believe the Royals have so much faith in their young bats. And that's, if you look at the MLB.com top prospects, like the top 9 are offensive players. And that's not a good thing to have.
No.
You want the pitching prospects. But I believe they look at what they have in the organization. That includes the big league level. Jorge Soler, Jorge Bonifacio, Salvador Perez, maybe Whit Merrifield, you know, a few of those guys. And I believe they say, okay, we have enough position players that our 2021 team is in-house already. And if it's not, there's a player or two they can go pick up. But they don't have a starting rotation.
Right now,
if you think about 2021, you've got the last year of Duffy's deal, which who knows how that's going to look at that point. You've got Jake Junis. You've got maybe Brad Keller. He's made 2 starts and hasn't gone more than 75 pitches yet. So we don't know about that. And a bunch of question marks. So you have to figure something out. And I think they look at that and they say, okay, we've got Melendez and Perez and Sebastian Romero and Nick Denny. You know, there's a few catching prospects. There's Prado. There's O'Hearn. There's Dozier. There, at first base, there's Nicky Lopez, Adalberto Modesty. There's Whit Merrifield, like I mentioned. There's Emmanuel Rivera at third base. Matias, we talked about. Khalil Lee, who we haven't even mentioned, just having a phenomenal season in Wilmington. I mentioned, you know, Soler, Bonifacio, all these guys. They think they've got a lineup. But now I think they think they've got a rotation. And Brady Singer, Jackson Kolar, Mike Bubik, Daniel Lynch, Jonathan Bolin, the top 5 picks they picked on day 1, I think all of those guys could start. My guess is Bolin's a reliever in the long term. I don't think Lynch is anything in the long term, but that's my opinion. But they've got starters there. They went out and they got other guys later in the draft. They've got a lot of pitching now. And I believe the Royals look at what they did in the draft, and as long as they can get everybody signed, which I don't anticipate will be a problem, at least the ones that are important, I believe that they think that they are all set now for 2021. And you're probably going to start seeing these guys come up maybe as early as late next season. So we talk about this season being uninteresting. Next season will be, too, to start. But I think we're going to start seeing guys, you know, trickle into the big leagues. Brady Singer could debut in September next year. I would not be surprised. Same with Jackson Kolar. You look at Khalil Lee, who I just mentioned. He's in Wilmington now. I can't imagine he'll be in Wilmington much longer. When you're in Northwest Arkansas, you're a hop, skip, and a jump from the majors.
Right.
So he's got to be pretty close. I mean, we're going to start seeing these guys. I think the philosophy was to get these college pitchers to make it so that when these guys come up, they actually have some support. They don't have to score 7 runs a game in their first 2 years in the big leagues and get discouraged. And baseball is a mental game. It's discouraging when you have to do everything for your team as a rookie. And so, I believe the Royals feel like they now have a championship roster somewhere within what they have in the organization. And, you know, I hope they're right. To me, it's a risk because I don't think, other than maybe Khalil Lee, I don't think they have a surefire prospect in that organization. There's not one guy you can hang your hat on and say he's going to be a big leaguer. You know, 10 years ago, they had Hosmer Moustakas and Will Myers. And you think, okay, those are big leaguers. We know those are big leaguers. Barring injury, those are big leaguers, and still get pitching. But they don't have that quality of prospect in the organization right now, and so it's a little bit risky. But, hey, if it works, it's going to work really well.
David, hey, I appreciate all the great information. If you want to follow David on Twitter, @DBLesky, Lesky, writes about the Royals for BP Kansas City, Baseball Prospectus, and follow all of those guys, Clint Scholes and On and on and on. David, I appreciate you taking time on your Saturday morning to join us and talk about some good Royals things along with the bad. So I appreciate it, and have a great weekend, my friend.
You do the same. Thanks, Brad.
All right, that's David Leskey joining us. And if you want to look at the Royals' future, you can see it the next 2 days at the College World Series. Today at noon on ESPN, Brady Singer, the Royals' first-round pick at 18 overall, goes head-to-head with Auburn's Casey Mize, who was number one overall by the Detroit Tigers. So this could be a American League Central matchup for years to come. And then Sunday at noon, Jackson Kowar, also from Florida, Royals pick at number 33 overall, will be throwing against Auburn. On that note, we'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter, live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I like that track. That is a solid track for a Saturday right there. Love that.
I always think it's so funny that whenever we play Del the Funky Homo Sapien, you're like, oh, I really like that one. It's just very ironic to me.
Yeah, I like it. It's good stuff. By the way, my name is Brad Porter. That was the voice of Jed Marshall, who's here in studio as well. Rudy Salazar is running the show. Couple of minutes left before we get to Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Get an update from Chiefs OTAs. Finish up on the Royals, and I'll throw this out to you, Jed. The Royals draft over the last few years, like if you look at the players and they're high-level college players and they're in the College World Series, if it's a random shortstop or a catcher or an outfielder, I might try to tune in for a couple of minutes here and there because you don't know how many at-bats you're actually going to see and how much of the game you're actually interested in. But as I mentioned at the end of the last segment, these 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, Brady Singer, the Royals' first-round pick at 18 overall, pitches today at noon against Auburn. Oh, noon Eastern. 11 o'clock. Okay, I got it wrong. That's because I'm on the Florida Gators website, and I read noon. So at 11 o'clock, Brady Singer against Casey Mize, who is the number one overall pick by the Tigers. And then Sunday at 11 o'clock on ESPN, Jackson Kowar, the Royals pick at number 33 overall, pitches for Florida against Auburn. Are you more inclined to watch if it's a pitcher when you know you're going to watch 6-7 innings and college pitchers sometimes go 130, 140 pitches?
I would be more inclined to watch, but I'm also a nerd and probably would have been watching anyways. Okay. But yes, that does pique my interest now, being able to watch a guy work and see what he does. It's always interesting, like you mentioned, the pitch counts in college baseball.
Ridiculous.
They don't really care about what the kids do.
There was a kid last weekend who was at like 120 pitches, and they had like a 2.5-hour rain delay and went back out again.
Yeah.
That's insanity.
This
is why you have to have an insurance policy.
Yeah, my buddy played at University of Arizona, and whichever Weaver brother was the better one at Long Beach, I remember he talked
Jared
about
Weaver.
How... Jared Weaver. Yeah, oh, was it Jared? Okay, he'd go out there and throw like 140, 150 pitches, and his coach wouldn't even bat an eye, and he'd just roll out there. But I don't know. It's a different baseball game.
College
Shohei,
pitches,
and when he was in high school, threw like 250 pitches in a game
ridiculous.
Once back in Japan.
Wild.
And who knows? Maybe that's an exaggeration. All right, so we're coming up on a timeout here. We're going to go 160 pitches today. Jed and I have no pitch limit here. Neither does Rudy, so we're going. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com. Give us a report from Chiefs OTAs, and then at 11, Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com talking Sporting KC and World Cup. You're listening to Sports Saturday. I'm Brad Porter, and we'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.